did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, and spend wisely. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Try Greenlight risk-free today at greenlight.com/iHeart.
Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 16, powered by Intel Core Ultra processors, and more. Plus, curate your dream setup with great deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to leading-edge technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Again, that's Dell.com/deals.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck, and Jerry's here too. And this is Stuff You Should Know, all about the dark web and all the crazy, crazy drugs and hitmen you can buy on it.
Sorry, I was still doing my vocal warm-ups.
I didn't know that that helps. What does that help?
20 dwarves took turns doing push-ups on the lawn. I'm ready.
Okay, good. Well, so welcome to the podcast, everybody.
I figured it should start warming up, you know, 17 years into this. 18? How long?
16? So, yeah. 16-ish. Yeah. A little over 16. Coming up on 17, Chuck.
Just wait till you hear the way my lips move in this episode. They're so loose.
So did you loosen your lips up just specifically because the content of this episode is so thrilling?
I thought you could say something about sinking ships. No, I didn't, but this is a good one. This, if everyone heard our episode on the dark web from 2020, some of this will be familiar, but this is just more in depth about the notorious Silk Road itself.
Yeah, for sure. And we were talking about Silk Road. For those of you history buffs, Middle Eastern history buffs, who are disappointed, sorry. But you should stick around because this is going to be a pretty interesting episode.
I didn't think about that. When are they going to talk about cinnamon?
We did a whole episode on cinnamon, so relax there, guy.
Yeah.
We're talking about what is widely considered, because I think it is, the world's first illicit marketplace on the internet that was opened in 2011, shut down in 2013. It had a very, very brief run. It was like the Beatles of illicit drug trading websites. And its legend will live on for basically forever, because not only was it just the most audacious thing anyone had ever done on the internet, as far as anyone knew, up to that point, it created a blueprint for a bunch of imitators to come. And also this, the way everything that law enforcement threw at this case, and the court case in, as well, was just so nuts that it's just a heck of a story. How about that, Brownie?
That's great. There were 15 filthy jokes I was going to say when you said the most outrageous thing anyone had done on the internet up until that point. I was like, I had a rolling Terminator-like scroll about all the early internet nasty memes that would go around.
You couldn't pick any of them?
No, I just didn't want to say any of them out loud because then kids would look them up.
I gotcha. Yeah, I was wondering, and we probably should have talked about this before we recorded, are we going to like call out any active sites or anything like that?
Nah.
Okay. Because I know some. I looked them up.
Hey, just text those to me. It's fine.
Okay. So let's start from the start, right? We're going to start with a guy named Ross Ulbricht. And the reason we're introducing him early on is because he is the mastermind behind Silk Road. It was his idea. He built it originally. He ran the thing by hand, almost single-handedly for a very long time. You just really can't talk about Silk Road without him, because his personality was so wrapped up into the ethos of the site that you can't really extract one from the other, despite the fact that while he was sitting in federal court, he really wished that they would extract one from the other.
Big thanks to Kyle, first of all, our friend and contributing writer from across the pond, for his work on this. But Kyle is keen to point out just a little bit about the dark web. You know, we have a whole episode from 2020 if you want to go listen to that. But if you don't know what the dark web is, it's a part of the web where you can go and do things anonymously. And that's just a, you know, the simplest way to say it. It's much more complicated than that, obviously, if we did a whole episode. But it's where you can go if you don't want to be indexed by Google, if you don't want your traffic monitored, and if you want your anonymity ensured. Doesn't necessarily mean you're some awful person doing awful things. No. There's a lot of people there that just believe in the freedom and anonymity that you should have on the internet.
Yeah, also, yes, for sure. Some people are just like, there's no reason for you to be invading my privacy while I'm reading The Guardian or something like that, right?
Yeah, just to sell me stuff.
Exactly. That's part of it for sure, too. And then also other people are like they might be whistleblowers and they have information that they could very easily get them thrown in prison. But it's really important to get out to the public. There's sites like ProPublica and other journalists that have dark web sites to where you can submit information, and even ProPublica doesn't know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And with Silk Road specifically, there were three things that came together that made Silk Road exist. And without any of them, I don't think it would have ever existed. One was who I already introduced, Ross Ulbricht.
Mm-hmm.
The second is Tor, the Tor network, which basically when you go onto the dark web using Tor, the first thing it does is route you through three different random servers, and each one encrypts your information and gives you a new IP address. So no one can figure out who you are, including the websites you visit. And then the third thing is Bitcoin. There's just no way you could have made transactions on drug deals over the internet without untraceable currency that doesn't involve like a central bank or some other third party like that.
Yeah, for sure. And, Bitcoin was huge because it was they were good for each other. Like Ross Ulbricht sort of embraced Bitcoin in a big way, which even though it was on the dark web and even though Silk Road was, you know, as you'll soon learn, dabbling in illegal drug trading, they used Bitcoin exclusively. So the rise of Bitcoin and the rise of, things on the dark web kind of go hand in hand.
Yes, for sure. And this is also a time where like the early 2010s, this was in like disruptive technology was just coming out left and right from Silicon Valley, where it's like, well, say goodbye to newspapers, say goodbye to printed books, say goodbye to music. And I mean, it did have disruptive effects, but as we've seen, it still kind of mellows out. It's not like the original thing just totally goes away, but this was that same time. So a lot of people have likened Ross Ulbricht to basically a darker version, if there is such a thing, of some of those Silicon Valley bros.
Right.
who started up a lot of those disruptive tech companies.
Yeah, and you know what? I think we need to add a fourth on our Silk Road Mount Rushmore because we have to mention Adrian Chen, who in 2011, when the Silk Road went live, wrote for Gawker and wrote this big expose on the Silk Road just a few months later, including like how to get there, what you can do there, and it would have been a thing anyway, but the fact that it was kind of exploded on Gawker made it bigger, quicker than it would have been, I think.
Right. And that also brought it to the attention of the authorities pretty quickly. Chuck Schumer.
Yeah, Chucky.
He basically came out against it first, I think. So now the Senate was against it. He said it was a certifiable one-stop shop for illegal drugs that represents the most brazen attempt to peddle drugs online that we have ever seen.
And they all went, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You nailed it.
Yeah, right. And so because of that Tor network and because of just the anonymity of Bitcoin and the fact that people were drug dealers and drug users engaging in illicit crime over the internet, like there was a sense like it doesn't matter. Like the government can't find any of these people. If they do, it's just random luck, like, say, intercepting a drug shipment in the mail. But if you're really trying to track somebody down who's a user of Silk Road, you're just not going to be able to do it. There's just a sense of security and safety that people had when they were using it, including Ross Ulbricht.
Yeah, and they also were pretty smart early on, or I guess Ulbricht was, by making it a familiar shopping online shopping experience. It, I mean, I never saw it. I think I managed to find some like screenshots and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it supposedly looked and operated much like any other e-retailer. You would go on there and you would have your little shopping basket, and mm-hmm. you would have your items that you could, you know, are all categorized and listed that you could sift through, and you could look at customer reviews, and you know, I'm sure there were bad deals that went down, but supposedly it worked because the people selling the drugs believe that you should really sell the thing that you're trying to sell, and you'll stay in business.
Right. Just like if you're you have terrible customer service and you're selling like
widgets.
Sure. I was thinking like some sort of sewn strawberry potholder or something in the shape of a strawberry.
So much better than a widget.
But you tell all of your customers who say like it's the stitching's coming loose that they can go to hell and die.
Yeah.
You're going to get a bad rating and people are going to stop buying from you, especially if there's other people selling sewn strawberry potholders, right?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing if you're selling drugs on Silk Road. There were a ton of people selling pot and acid and ecstasy and heroin and cocaine that like you just didn't have to rely on just one dealer. So the dealers were competing with one another. And to compete, they just tried to keep their user rating up as best as possible. And that kept them honest. It's just nuts. Like this whole thing in theory should have collapsed on day one. It just should never have worked out because it was just based on so many faulty assumptions that just happened to come together and support this site until the Fed shut it down.
Yeah, they had a seller's guide where if you were going to sell your drugs, they would say, hey, here's how to do that. Here's how you can ship drugs through the mail, you know, pretty safely, vacuum sealing and all, you know, all kinds of tips and tricks. And not that many packages supposedly were intercepted, a very small percentage of them. But you mentioned some of the things in your I thought you were singing that Queens of the Stone Age song there for a second.
Which one?
When you were, I don't know, they had that one song that was, I thought it was not so great. Cocaine and ecstasy and blah, 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 blah. And they were just like rattling off drugs or whatever.
That doesn't sound very great.
No, it wasn't one of their best songs. I was into them for a minute.
I like that one hit song of theirs. It's really good.
No One Knows, maybe?
Yes, that's the one. I didn't know.
It's a good song. Yeah, so you could buy anything you want. And it wasn't just like, hey, here's some cocaine if you're interested in this upper. It was very, very specific stuff, like a very specific strain of Colombian cocaine or a very specific strain of heroin, tar heroin that you could find. You know, if you've ever been to a legal cannabis shop in any of the states that allow that here in the U.S., it was sort of like that. You know, you get very detailed descriptions of stuff and, you know, you could have a customer service representative help you find what you wanted. And it was like if you were into that kind of thing, it was probably pretty great for you and probably much safer than going to some drug dealer's house, maybe. I don't know.
That's a big deal. So one of the things that was touted by supporters of Ross Ulbricht and Silk Road was that it was a site for harm reduction.
Yeah.
That it was so vastly safer than buying drugs on the street, often from some rando you don't even know or at a club or something like that.
Oh, yeah. That's dangerous.
That it was actually providing a service that actually made the world safer. It didn't fly very well, as we'll see, but that was a big talking point for them.
Yeah, and I don't want anyone to misinterpret that I'm saying that, like, hey, you should just be able to buy drugs in the mail and it's totally safe and you should trust that. But they seemed to be setting up a situation where they were trying to ensure that. There was a lot of trust between buyers, sellers, everybody. Like a situation like this doesn't happen if there's not trust between all the participating parties.
Precisely. Yeah, for sure. It's just crazy to me that it ever worked.
Should we take a break?
Yeah, let's take a break and we'll come back and talk about some of the nuts and bolts of the whole thing.
All right, we'll be right back.
Joshua Shock. Bad credit can lead to a lot of no's. Buying a new house, car, applying for rewards cards. Kickoff can turn them into yeses. If your credit is under 600, you could jump like 28 points in your first month. Kickoff is the best way to build credit fast. No credit checks, no hidden fees, and no interest. It's simple. Kickoff optimizes key credit factors. Credit bureaus see good behavior, and your credit grows fast. Start building credit now for only $1 for your first month at getkickoff.com/iHeartPodcast. That's kickoff without the C. Get KIKOFF.com/iHeartPodcast. Must sign up via getkickoff.com/iHeartPodcast to activate offer. Offer applies to new customers first month only, subject to approval. Offer subject to change. Terms and conditions may apply. Point stat based on Equifax VantageScore 3.0. Changes for kickoff users starting under 600 who made their first on-time payment between January 2021 and March 2024. Payment and credit activity outside kickoff can have an impact on your credit. Individual results may vary.
Some might say Homes.com is the best home shopping site, but why? Is it their sleek, ad-free user interface? Enjoy a search experience without distractions. Maybe it's their unmatched school insights, featuring district details and reviews from expert sources like Niche, every parent's dream. Or is it their super comprehensive agent directory, or how they always connect you directly with a listing agent on every listing? Homes.com even offers a comprehensive search experience with 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and options to search by commute and architectural style. Homes.com is bringing you all the in-depth info you need. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, everybody. It's Chuck and Josh here to talk to you about Squarespace. Squarespace makes it easy to build the website of your dreams and do whatever you like with it.
That's right. They make it really easy to sell access to content on your websites like online courses, blogs, videos, and memberships. You can earn recurring revenue by gating your content behind a paywall even. Simply set the price and choose whether to charge a one-time fee or subscription for access.
Yeah, and when it's time to collect that money, Squarespace offers an easier way to collect payments so you can focus on growing your business. You can invoice clients and get paid for your services, turn leads into clients with proposals, estimates, and contracts, and simplify your workflow and manage your service business on one platform. What else could you possibly ask for?
That's right. Just go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. So you've mentioned this guy, Ross Ulbricht, the founder and creator. We need to talk a little bit about this dude. He went by the alias Dread Pirate Roberts, even though later in his defense, there would be it would be brought up that there were like many Dread Pirate Roberts over the years and that he sold it at one point and wasn't even involved anymore. It's if you follow the court case, it gets really, really in the weeds.
Yeah, but his quote in court was, "Do you not know the Dread Pirate Roberts reference?"
Right. Yeah. They were like, "Who? Why would you name yourself that?"
Right.
And he said, "Have you never seen The Princess Bride?"
Yes. And for the people who haven't seen The Princess Bride, number one, go see The Princess Bride. Mm-hmm. And number two, Dread Pirate Roberts was the name of a pirate who was essentially like a character that different people over the years and generations inhabited. So say Dread Pirate Roberts was 200 years old because he was made up of successive pirates who wore that mask and used that name.
Yeah, for sure. So Ulbricht had a very, very smart guy, is a very smart guy. He had a Bachelor of Science in Physics, got his Master's in Material Science and Engineering, and was in Austin, Texas in 2009 when he tried a few different initial companies, basically. He had a video game company tried. He found the most success with a secondhand book retailer called Good Wagon Books, where he kind of learned how to do web development and inventory management and e-retailing, kind of a starter kit for what he would need to start Silk Road. But it still wasn't making the kind of dough he wanted to make. I think they were pulling in maybe low six figures in a year.
Yeah. Yeah. And he had like five employees sorting like 50,000 books. And
not bad.
They were selling them on Amazon like you do. Like you can buy used books on Amazon. That's just what they did. But his heart wasn't in it. And after the The shelves that he had built in this warehouse to hold the books all collapsed. He was like, I'm not going to pick those up. I'm just going to set this warehouse on fire and walk away.
That's really funny. That sounds like something I would do.
I would do the same thing.
I wouldn't set it on fire and walk away, but I'd just walk away.
So he, one of the other reasons he was keen to walk away is he'd been already thinking about Silk Road for close to a year by now.
Yeah.
And one of the things that really kind of spurred his interest in creating something like an online illicit drug sale website is that he became interested in libertarian theory, specifically libertarian economic theory, which is basically that if you don't have economic freedom in particular, you're going to be a slave to the grind. They've got you, essentially. And that to you can either get rich and remove yourself from that game or that rat race, or you can try to change the rules of the game and make it much more fair and equitable and get rid of coercion and all that stuff. And it's all based on the libertarian philosophy of self-ownership, which essentially explains itself.
Yeah, he, I don't know, explain it.
Oh, well, you own yourself. So any kind of laws or prohibitions of anything that, say, you do to yourself, say, taking drugs, is just completely outrageous and immoral and is illegitimate.
Okay.
So drug laws specifically are illegitimate and terrible to libertarians because you're taking the drugs for yourself and that's your choice, right? It's personal choice. So that really kind of explains a lot why he was like an illicit drug website. It was a thumb in the eye to the drug laws that he and other libertarians feel were illegitimate.
All right. I'm glad I asked.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked too, because I really wanted to get that off my chest.
So Silk Road grew. He started, it was not just a one-person operation. It was too big for that. So he needed some employees. These people all went by these kind of fun little nicknames, including Variety Jones and Inigo. Oh, also from Princess Bride.
Yeah.
Didn't notice that. Libertas, Smed. And then another one, Chronic Pain, one word. The first C is capitalized. And that person's name was Curtis Green, and he was the first person that would be arrested in the Silk Road operation. And so you'll just, you know, sort of put a pin in that guy.
Yes, for sure. So the he gets the website launched in 2011, around the beginning of 2011. And to get things kicked off, he started growing psilocybin mushrooms. So that there was something somebody was selling on Silk Road. And pretty soon other people were like, wait, this is, you're really doing this? Like, this is for real? I want to make money selling drugs online. And it just kind of took off from there. Again, without cryptocurrency, there just wouldn't have been a Silk Road. And this is actually pointed to by some people as like an early proving ground that showed like, yep, Bitcoin works. It does exactly what it says it can do. And it could completely revolutionize the global economy. This was the first chance for it to really kind of show its stuff. And it really did because it worked. And one of the other reasons it worked too is because Ross Ulbricht was honest. He hand transacted every transaction between seller and buyer on the site for a while. And at that point, he would hold the money in escrow. And then when the deal was done and everybody was satisfied, he would release the money to the seller. At any point in that string, he could have been like, thanks for the money, chumps. Thanks for the money, chumps. Thanks for the money, chumps. And just taken off with the Bitcoin. And he didn't. And that the reputation that helped give that site was another reason it started to grow and flourish.
Yeah, for sure. So as the site is, you know, kind of going along and it's making all kinds of money and getting more and more popular, or as popular as something is on the dark web, he started getting a little more political under his moniker, DPR, Dread Pirate Roberts, started making these big statements about just sort of his philosophies about politics. He would say things like, stop funding the state with your tax dollars and direct your productive energies into the black market. So it started sort of bordering on manifesto kind of stuff. I think they would have shut it down anyway, just because they were dealing in illegal drugs. But the U.S. government definitely hates it when they don't like the word manifesto. Right. So I think all this other political stuff definitely drew even more attention and ire maybe than it would have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. It, like I said, it was a thumb in the eye, and I think it kind of felt like that to the government and the powers that be, right?
Yeah, he kind of thought, and he kind of was leading a revolution in a lot of ways, because as we'll see later on, a lot of more sites like this were born in its wake.
Right. So it's interesting to see, too, the evolution of him going from a libertarian idealist to what the feds eventually described as like the kingpin of a global drug cartel.
Yeah.
Which is really overblown, as we'll see.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, he, even as a libertarian, said, nope, there's limits here. Like, this is not just a free-for-all. You can't have child pornography. You can't try to sell weapons of mass destruction. You can't offer hitman services, sell stolen credit cards or personal information. Like, you just can't do that. And if you scam anybody, we're going to boot you off the site and we're going to hunt you down and sick dogs on you or something like that. He said basic rules are to treat others as you would wish to be treated and don't do anything to hurt or scam someone else. So that was like the whole idea. And then the fact that his moniker was Dread Pirate Roberts, and everybody loves, like, there's no one who's seen The Princess Bride and doesn't love it. Prove me wrong. I will prove you wrong. So all of that kind of combined, almost a cult of personality grew up around Dread Pirate Roberts and attracted more and more people to Silk Road. And like, I think I get the impression like you were, like you felt cool to be a user of Silk Road.
Yeah. Like he created a kinder, gentler drug trade in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
If you're wondering like, yeah, but this guy could get shut down in a lot of ways that don't have anything to do with the government, like a denial of service attack or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly, he was paying a lot of money for protection for this kind of thing, maybe up to $50,000 a week. Wired did a really great, and I remember reading this back then. I didn't go back into it, but a big two-part report on this, and they had it up to $50,000 per week in protection. But considering they ended up making about $1 billion over, 2 years or so, that's, you know, pennies in the fountain.
Yeah, for sure. But protection is in quotes. Like, that was from the very hackers who were like, we're going to shut your site down if you don't
it's
give
like
us
It's like any other mob
week.
Protection. Yeah.
Exactly.
We're not going to wreck your
racket,
store.
For sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he would get blackmailed all the time. People were trying to shut down the site. Like, it was criminals were attracted to Silk Road, and there's plenty of criminals who, they're like speculators. So blackmailers are, you know, they're not actually doing anything productive. They're just making money off somebody else's work, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it kind of attracted that stuff. So in addition to dealing with all of that, he was dealing with customer service. He was trying to keep the site running. Something to know about Ross Ulbricht too, he was a self-taught coder. So he was teaching himself how to keep this massive website going as he went along and keeping himself totally anonymous to everybody, including all of the people he worked with who were de facto employees, basically.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of stress after a little while.
Totally. And besides the drugs, he also had a team of crocheters making those strawberry oven mitts. Lots to keep up with.
For sure.
So how did it all go bad? Well, it's because, again, the government was very, very keen on getting this thing shut down as fast as they could. Mm-hmm. But like you mentioned earlier, the very way this thing was built made it really, really hard. Almost said impossible, but clearly not. But really, really hard to find out any real information about who these people were, where they were, where their computers were. So the FBI got involved initially in trying to take down Tor. It was called Operation Onion Peeler, and I'm pretty sure we talked about that in the Dark Web app.
Mm-hmm.
But they in 2013, there was an agent named Chris Tarbell that identified a secret server at a data center, a Tor data center in Iceland, and this is really what got the ball rolling.
Yeah, so this is the official line of the FBI, the way that they finally discovered the actual IP address of Silk Road was that Tarbell was sitting there analyzing the traffic at going to and from the site while he was like sending in bad information at it, like bad passwords and stuff like that, and then tracking what IP addresses came back. And then he copied the IP addresses and he put them into a browser URL and do that over and over again. And eventually he struck gold and stumbled onto the real IP address of Silk Road, which was then traceable to that server data center in Iceland. And from there, they then had a copy of the Silk Road website, including all administration access and privileges, and they started to set up their case from that point on.
That's right. That was the FBI's line. If that seems a little hard to believe that they would just sort of get lucky, you're not the only person who thinks that. None other than, is he Bill or Ted?
Bill.
Alex Winter from Bill and Ted's excellent adventure and bogus journey.
And don't forget, he was a vampire in Lost Boys, too.
Yeah, good point. He made a film called Deep Web that, was that out this year?
I think so, or last year. Very recent.
Yeah, pretty recent film. I think 24, where he, he didn't like create this contention, but he basically brought to light like, hey, a lot of people say that, no, that's not how you found out. What you did was trampled on Ulbricht's Fourth Amendment rights, and that you hacked Silk Road. You didn't have a warrant to do so, and you had some sort of, mass scanning going on the internet for passwords, and you lied about all this.
Yeah, the idea is that the NSA was involved helping in this investigation using their crazy, terrible powers to basically find passwords to that site, and they used it to hack in. And you were like, okay, whatever, they're trying to take down the site, it's the FBI. Well, the gist of that is that they did that first, then got the evidence that they then went and got a search warrant for, and then everything started to get legitimate from that point on. So that's the contention about his Fourth Amendment rights to against search, illegal search and seizure were violated.
Yeah, and if it's all just sounds like weird and screwy because it's online, it would be no different than if they broke into someone's house, took some evidence, and then said, now that we have the evidence, we're going to get a search warrant to go legally back into that house.
Right.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Tarbell. He was an FBI agent. He and the FBI were just one of multiple agencies from Department of Homeland Security to the DEA to the IRS.
Oh, yeah.
All working, like each one had a task force trying to take down this website, competing with one another in a lot of cases to take down this website and catch this big fish that Chuck Schumer didn't like. And like finally, Tarbell was the one who gets the credit, not just for finding the actual IP address and then the server for Silk Road and all of the evidence that that yielded, but he was there on the day and helped orchestrate. This guy was a cybercrime FBI agent. So again, this is the official line. And it's very thrilling in the Wired article, how they describe it. But he helped orchestrate or oversaw the actual arrest of Ross Ulbricht, which in and of itself was just fantastically amazing.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So the FBI gets that copy of the server contents from Iceland. They look at all the traffic and they found traffic to the administrator's login. And then narrowed that down to the most recent traffic was in San Francisco at a place called Cafe Luna on Sacramento Street. They did some more investigation through the IRS, chipping in this time. Like you said, so many agencies involved. And they matched the San Francisco lead. So they were like, this is all lining up, you guys. There was an IRS agent named Gary Alford who saw posts about Silk Road on forums in I think a couple of years, 2011 and 2013, from a user named Altoid. And the email in the post history said RussUlbricht@gmail.com. They found out that he lived near that cafe, and all roads all of a sudden were pointing to Ross Ulbricht.
And then supposedly the really damning piece of evidence was that that user, Altoid, quickly changed their username to Frosty. And Frosty was the main user account that ran Silk Road.
Yeah.
That was the name of the main central user account, right? So, like, all of these things just falling into place, it was just almost too good to believe.
Yeah, and then it went down like a movie. And you know what? Maybe that's a great time for a little cliffhanger, huh?
Oh, boy. Encyclopedia.
All right. We're going to see what movie we're talking about right after this.
You want to buy a home or car? Maybe you want to lease a new apartment, but your credit isn't where it needs to be. You need Kickoff. If your credit is under 600, you can jump like 28 points in your first month. Kickoff is the best way to build credit fast. No credit checks, no hidden fees, and no interest. It's simple. Kickoff optimizes key credit factors. Credit bureaus see good behavior, and your credit grows fast. Start building credit now for only $1 for your first month at getkickoff.com/iHeartPodcast. That's Kickoff without the C. Get KIKOFF.com/iHeartPodcast. Must sign up via getkickoff.com/iHeartPodcast to activate offer. Offer applies to new customers first month only. Subject to approval. Offer subject to change. Terms and conditions may apply. Point stat based on Equifax VantageScore 3.0. Changes for Kickoff users starting under 600 who made their first on-time payment between January 2021 and March 2024. Payment and credit activity outside Kickoff can have an impact on your credit. Individual results may vary.
Some might say Homes.com is the best home shopping site, but why? Is it their sleek, ad-free user interface? Enjoy a search experience without distractions. Maybe it's their unmatched school insights, featuring district details and reviews from expert sources like Niche, every parent's dream. Or is it their super comprehensive agent directory, or how they always connect you directly with a listing agent on every listing? Homes.com even offers a comprehensive search experience with 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and options to search by commute and architectural style. Homes.com is bringing you all the in-depth info you need. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
T-Mobile 5G home internet keeps getting better. Get our fastest connection loaded with benefits. Get T-Mobile's best home internet starting at $55 a month with auto pay and any voice line. Plus, price lock. We won't raise your rate on internet. Check availability at T-Mobile.com/home internet.
Exclusions like taxes and fees apply. Guarantees regular monthly rate plan price of fixed wireless 5G internet data with qualifying service. After $15 bill credit with postpaid voice line plus $5 a month without auto pay with debit or bank account. Regulatory fees included for qualifying accounts. $35 connection charge applies. Speeds vary due to factors affecting cellular networks.
Chuck, I'm going to guess the movie is Old Yeller. Is it? Am I right?
You nailed it.
Okay. Poor Old Yeller. I hate how this goes.
I was going to spoil Old Yeller, but I decided not to. Watch it. That dog may live. You never know.
Good for you for not spoiling a 60-year-old film.
Yeah, and a book, I think, too, right?
Yes. Although there was a sequel, it wasn't very well received.
Old Yeller 2? Yeah. Really?
It turns out the little kid missed the first time. He didn't this in the second film, though.
And now Old Yeller's back for revenge?
Yeah.
Write that down. That's a good one.
Okay. So, what movie are we talking about then? How about what type of movie are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about probably some sort of a courtroom thriller, because what happened was they went to a library. And literally, and this is what the prosecution said, literally caught him with his fingers at the keyboard running Silk Road. They were in the library. They had an agent, chatting with him and obviously surreptitiously undercover. And while this was happening, they drew his attention away by starting a little quarrel among some other people, also, FBI actors or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a woman, another FBI agent, sitting across from Ulbricht at the time when this happened, and Ulbricht turns around and is like, what's going on over there? She grabs that laptop, and because he could probably, in a single swipe of a keystroke or something, encrypt everything on his laptop if he saw coming at him. Mm-hmm. So they knew that could happen. They diverted his attention just long enough for this agent to grab his computer, and that was it.
And boy, oh boy, did they find some just damning evidence.
Yeah.
It turns out Ross Ulbricht kept a diary of his ideas and growth and administration and all the problems he had to deal with for Silk Road. Those were found
diary.
On his... Exactly. Chronic pain really hurt my feelings today. Those were found on his laptop. Logs of chat logs that he had between him and other administrators about running the site. He was logged in as the main user, Frosty, the person who was actually running the show, when they stole it or grabbed his lapbook. No, stole it. He had spreadsheets like tracking Silk Road. I mean, like just, if a prosecutor could be like, I want this, 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 and this for evidence, it couldn't get any better than what they found on Ross Ulbricht's laptop.
Yeah. What? So they also traced about $80 million in profit to him. Mm-hmm. This is a dumb question that I'm just now thinking of, but what did he just take a cut from every transaction? Was it that simple?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I figured. Yep. I just didn't know for sure.
And I think it was a reasonable cut. I don't think it was some massive take or anything like that. And he would just transfer it like once a week. Like his accumulated cuts from that week. He was very honest in that sense.
So he would get his small percentage, a bottle of Dilaudid and a strawberry oven mitt.
Yep.
For every transaction.
Every Saturday night.
So we mentioned earlier that as part of his defense, they were like, you know what? He may have started Silk Road, but he sold it. And there were many Dread Pirate Roberts, and one of the other ones framed him. All of this stuff was just a small part of his defense. It was not an easy sell. It did not work. He was convicted for creating and operating Silk Road and got five sentences, got a 20-year sentence, a 15-year sentence, a five-year sentence, two life sentences with no chance of parole. And the judge said it was your opus. You wanted it to be your legacy, and it is.
Yeah, the judge mentioned harming the fabric of, it was very destructive to the fabric of society. And when your judge is pulling out fabric of society in your sentencing,
yeah, you're screwed.
You're in big trouble. Yeah. And so he was effectively handed a death sentence. Like, you don't outlive a sentence like that. And it was just totally out of proportion to the charges he was facing, like a conspiracy to commit like drug trafficking and fraud. Just, I mean, it was some hardcore offenses, but nonviolent offenses. And he was given the kind of sentence that you would give like a multiple killer or a mass killer or something like that, right? And the reason why is because there was evidence found of 5 to 6 murder for hire schemes mm-hmm. that he had ordered or agreed to mm-hmm. as Dread Pirate Roberts to kill like a blackmailer, a witness, some other people. And even though he was never charged in federal court for this, even though they couldn't prove any of those cases, and the prosecutors in this case even said to the jury, like, we're not saying, like, this is not part of his charges. We're not prosecuting him for that. But seriously, let us just tell you about that. And so they're like, he was tainted by the media. He had a bad reputation from that point on, because that's totally different from setting up a libertarian illicit drug marketplace. Now you're ordering hits on people to keep your drug enterprise going. That is a whole different kettle of fish in the public's mind. So his reputation was smeared from the outset. The jury was tainted with this information, and the idea. Oh, and the judge referenced it in explaining why the sentence was so harsh. And so all of that is generally considered illegal, like in illegitimate. And he tried to appeal all the way to the Supreme Court. They wouldn't hear it. And that was that. So his last chance is some president coming along at some point and saying, like, you know what? You're not so bad. Mm-hmm. Presto change-o, you're no longer a felon.
Yeah, he was actually would likely have been indicted for a murder conspiracy in Maryland. It was dropped because he got convicted, you know, for whatever life and beyond. Mm-hmm. It was dropped because he was, you know, convicted on the other charges for, you know, a gazillion years or whatever with no chance mm-hmm. of parole. Mm-hmm. But it was a pretty interesting situation with what ended up being a corrupt DEA agent and a Secret Service agent and a sting operation, basically, right?
Yeah, one of the guys who was really pursuing him from the outset was a guy named Carl Force, a DEA agent.
And what a name.
He posed as a gangster named Nob, who basically became a confidant of Dread Pirate Roberts. And it went so far out of undercover that he became a criminal himself. He posed as another user to sell tips and stuff about the investigation against Silk Road to Dread Pirate Roberts for like $100,000. He stole $350,000 in Bitcoin, which was one of the reasons why Dread Pirate Roberts ordered a hit on one of the people, because he thought that other person had stolen it. This guy was dirty as the day is long. And they say in part because a lot of the charges, including that extra murder for hire that was in Maryland, was arranged by this crooked DEA agent. They're like, we're not even going to try this one.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess there's no point at that point, especially because it's not like it was carried out. If there was like a, you know, if it had been carried out and there was a murder victim or something like that, they probably would have. But yeah, there were never any, just to be clear, you know, no murder for hires ever took place. But it was just the hint that that was going on really influenced the judge and the sentencing and everything. He was, I believe in Alex Winter's documentary, he points out that a lot of the people that were also brought to trial for this got very, including some of the drug sellers, people that ran Silk Road 2.0 after this.
Yeah,
they got sentences of like 6 years on average. Mm-hmm. And so there's been a lot of calls for clemency, that it was, you know, it was too stiff of a sentence.
Yeah. And they were clearly, I think the judge also referenced, like, this is a huge, like, everybody's watching this case. Everybody's following this, you know, and I want to send a message to anybody who would follow in your footsteps that we're going to basically give you a death sentence if you try it. And they just didn't follow through on that, which makes his sentence all the more unfair.
Yeah.
Like, had they handed down sentences similar to his for people, you know, setting up illicit drug marketplaces, there's some sort of like legitimacy to it just because of the precedent and then the custom that developed.
Yeah.
Just doing that to one person and then not following up, that's just wholly unfair. And again, possibly a violation of his Sixth Amendment rights to a fair trial.
Yeah. I mean, the idea may have been to send a message like, hey, this will never be tolerated. This is the first example of this, and we're going to throw, you know, 10 books at him. But it, you know, it didn't stop anything. Like I just mentioned, there was a Silk Road 2.0. That was closed in 2014, along with 26 other sites doing similar things. So Silk Road definitely opened that whole door, and it's I don't know if they can shut them down as fast as they can be born at this point, probably.
It seems like the kind of thing like mushrooms just cropping up, like you pluck one and two more grow in its place, essentially. Like, there's just nothing. I mean, it's not just American kids doing this. They're like, the Russians are, like, I'm sure the North Koreans are doing it. Like, everybody's doing it. Like, you just can't. It's impossible to stop now. So much so that it almost makes you wonder if somebody else would have come up with this concept had not first, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure someone would have come along.
There's a freeross.org website, which his supporters created, that's still around. And if you're asking, like, well, wait a minute, how can everybody support him if he's ordered like 5 or 6 murders for hire? Their position is that, like, that was the other Dread Pirate Roberts who set him up, whoever that was.
Right.
That Ross Ulbricht did not order those hits. That he's a good guy, a humane guy. He would never do something like that. But he's still in prison. I saw a tweet from him. I don't remember when, but he was saying the thing he misses the most is not being able to see the night sky anymore, which is somehow, like, the saddest thing you could say as a prisoner. But yeah, there's a lot of people out there who are like, that kid is never getting out. He just put such a thumb in the eye of the U.S. government and law enforcement that I don't know. I don't know if he'll ever get clemency.
Yeah, the night sky thing. It's definitely better than saying Olive Garden. Get more sympathy.
I don't know, man. Never-ending breadsticks?
That's true. I think that, oh, never mind.
Okay.
Let's move on.
Let's go get some breadsticks after this, okay?
Oh, that'd be great. Oh, boy, remember that time we went to Red Lobster?
In Silver Spring?
Yeah, and I had never really eaten there much, and that was one of your, like, special things as a kid, right? Eating those cheddar biscuits or whatever?
Yeah, kid.
And adult.
I love those things. Yes. I introduced you to them is what you're saying, right?
I think so. Like, I may have had one when I was a kid, but we just didn't go out to eat a whole lot. And Red Lobster was like far fancier than we could even afford on special occasions. So, yeah.
You always make me feel so bad about my upbringing, which was not wealthy or well-to-do in any way, shape, or form.
Silver spoons. Are you kidding me?
Not silver spoons. Red Lobster.
Yeah. No, that's fine. Red Lobster was a very... Or I imagine is a very double fancy dinner. We just didn't go out to eat much. Don't feel bad.
Yeah, I think the fancy part also is really largely marketing, Chuck. I think when you see the actual product in front of you, it's not super fancy.
Yeah.
Although, did you hear? I think they filed bankruptcy because of endless shrimp.
Yeah, it was a disaster.
Yeah, can you imagine? That's like an Onion headline.
Yeah, I've read quite a bit about that for some reason because it was just so interesting to me. And sad, you know, it's an American icon.
Yep.
Who knew?
Well, since we talked about Red Lobster, of course, that triggered listener mail, everybody.
I'm going to call this the Stuff You Should Know bump. Hey, guys, longtime listener, first-time caller, love the show. I'm curious if you've ever tracked the Stuff You Should Know bump. Does it even exist? I know that every time you mention a documentary with more info or something like that, my wife and I end up coming through our streaming services to find it and learn more. Most recently, we watched Tread after the Killdozer episode. Now I'm teeing up American Anarchist after Swatches. He said, oh, wait, I may have mixed that up with the Anarchist Cookbook episode. Anyway, and by the way, everyone, we forgot to mention the Swatch Guards. I feel so bad about that. We heard from a lot of people on that.
Oh, yeah, I forgot all about that.
I totally forgot about Swatch Guards.
Yeah.
Anyway, Swatch Guards are little rubber things that went over the glass, not the bezel. I was wrong about that. The bezel is the ring that holds the glass. So,
man, I understood it before, but not now.
You know, you look at a watch face, and I think I said the glass was the bezel. I just misspoke. The bezel is the ring that holds that glass in place.
Okay, I think I got it that second time around.
Yeah. All right, back to the email. Anyway, guys, it made me think that if there were other viewers like me, there could be a noticeable bump in views or listens every time a documentary or song or something gets mentioned. Creating your own version of the Colbert bump. We need statistics or get meta and do a SYSK episode about the STSK bump. I think
Very
you
nice.
Just goofed up on that last part. That's Andy me from too. Baltimore. Andy, we don't have data on this, but we definitely had people... send in, I can't remember what song it was that you referenced, but it ended up like ranking in Spotify or something, and we like to think that was because of us.
Well, we know it was because remember we conducted an experiment and talked about Barry Manilow, Even Now, and Black Sabbath's War Pigs, and
they
showed up in the top 10 of Spotify searches.
That's right. So, hey, I guess we should plug Silver Spoons then, the Josh Clark life story, and we'll see if that gets a bump on wherever that's streaming.
Speaking of bumps and plugs, there is one other podcast I'd like to plug, Chuck. You know our friend and colleague Daniel Whiteson from Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe podcast?
Oh, yeah.
So their podcast just came to an end, but ever the productive person Daniel came up with another one that just launched called Daniel and Kelly's Extraordinary Universe. He said, new podcast, same universe. So if you're into all the stuff that is very interesting, like space and time and aliens and black holes and philosophy and just the whole coolness of the universe we live in, then go check out Daniel and Kelly's Extraordinary Universe podcast for a recommendation.
It sounds great. Good people.
Well, if you want to be like, who was that sent us the STSK email?
Andy from Baltimore.
All right. If you want to be like Andy from Baltimore and get in touch with us, then we would love to hear from you. You can wrap it up, spank it on the bottom, and send it off to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Clock's ticking. Life's not a passive sport. Sometimes you gotta go out there and make your own luck. Sometimes you just gotta go for it. That's why everyone's rushing out to get the new Blitz scratch tickets from the Texas Lottery. With top prizes up to $1 million, it could be your chance to go big. So, Get moving and play today for a blitz of cash prizes. The blitz is on. Must be 18 or older. Play responsibly.
¿Qué hiciste el fin de semana?
Me llevé la Tacoma por un camino desconocido en el bosque y llegué a un campamento escondido al que solo podía llegar con ella.
¡Qué bien! Yo enganché el bote a la Tundra y me fui al lago. Lo remolcó como toda una pro.
¿Te mencioné que también fui a escalar rocas gracias al Crow Control de la Tacoma?
Parece que los dos tuvimos un fin de semana divertido.
El mío fue mejor.
La Toyota Tundra y Tacoma están hechas para todo tipo de diversión. Maneja una camioneta Toyota en tu concesionario más cercano y visita Toyota.com hoy mismo. Toyota, vayamos juntos. La disponibilidad de características varía según el modelo. Consulta Toyota.com para más detalles.
Are you still quoting 30-year-old movies? Have you said, cool beans, in the past 90 days? Do you think Discover isn't widely accepted? If this sounds like you, you're stuck in the past. Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. And every time you make a purchase with your card, you automatically earn cash back. Welcome to the now. It pays to Discover. Learn more at discover.com/creditcard. Based on the February 2024 Nielsen report.